Om Shanti. Dear brothers and sisters, this session is very special, not only because our dear Didi is here. Of course, we have been waiting for her to come up for many days, and finally she is here. But also because today we are gonna travel to Golden Age, because now it is time to invoke the royal sanskars. And somehow I thought that it's very perfect that Sister Judy is interviewing Sister Chanti about this topic, because actually royal sanskars can be seen in both of them. So Sister Chanti doesn't need any introduction, but what touched my heart, that when you met Baba, Sakar Baba, I think you were 19 years old, and how Baba said to you that you're going to become a leader, isn't it? So, and see, Baba is seeing the soul and recognizing the soul and not seeing the young 19-year-old girl in front of her. So Sister Chanti is really like the perfect model of the BK. I remember when I came to Baba, this is what I thought. I want to become like Sister Chanti. she's so perfect internally and externally. So that's why we are going to listen today about the royalty. And Sister Judy, she has been with Baba 30 years, and she's from Peace Village, New York, and she has a background in media, communication, consulting, writing, so she's very Baba's special jewel overall world, working with Yagya. So hopefully, I'm sure you're going to enjoy this session, and thank you and warm welcome.
Perfect BK. We already knew that.
No.
So, actually, don't you actually feel you already see the royal sanskars? I mean, right? It takes no imagination, does it? No. But, so Baba tells us that we are in a school to become princes and princesses. And sometimes he talks about things like manners, right? Having good manners, speaking gently, smiling in a certain way, right? Sometimes it's those things. But a lot of times it's a deeper notion of royalty than manners. Although they matter, manners matter, but just good manners won't get you to the kingdom, right? So I want to start simple. So Sister Chanti, I know that in this birth, you have been with royalty, right? You have been in the presence of royalty. Kali Yugi, Iron Aged, royalty, right? Yeah, you've been in rooms with kings and princes and things like that. So what did you notice when you were ushered into those rooms? What did you notice about this Kali Yugi royalty?
Especially last year, it was the month of July, and Madhuban specially called the people who belonged to the royal families of the past. And it was a small group, about 40 of them who came. But what you could see in each one was a great dignity and the way they carried themselves. And it was really, it's the end of Kali Yuga and they are no longer kings and queens, but they still, it was like the ancestral line was still visible. And they were all very gracious, very polite, And it wasn't just like, you know, superficial, but it was like they were giving respect to each other, respect to all the sisters, and that dignity was shining through. And they didn't wear their jewels and crowns, and I'm sure many of them do have many jewels still, but it was simple, but yet it was very royal.
Now, Mbaba says that when they receive a gift, they don't take it in their hand, right?
This is a little bit different now, because I imagine that, having actually met some princes and princesses and kings who are actually in position in different countries now, in England, in Spain in particular, these Netherlands also had sent a princess to the call of time at one point.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I think the people in position don't take anything. They just give a signal.
Mm-hmm.
But these people, we were giving them simple gifts, you know, Shiv Baba images and whatever. And they were very happy to receive it. But I think it's the attitude in which, I think, in terms of Baba's language, royalty means where you're totally content and you feel you have everything. You don't need anything from anyone. Everything is already there for you. And spiritually, I can understand that totally, but it also then shows on the external level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you ask the daddies, what do you need? What can I get you? They'd look at you blankly. What is it that I need?
Mm-hmm.
Spiritually, physically. So that state of contentment in which, no, I don't need anything, certainly mm-hmm. from human beings.
I mean, Baba actually didn't think much of democracy, did he?
No.
Government by the people, of the people. He actually thought kingdoms were a better...
Well, if you see what happens today in a few countries, I won't name names, but the majority decision seems to be of the lowest denomination, the
right.
lowest common factor. And so that's what you get. You know, I've heard this statement from Lokic people, you get the leaders you deserve.
Yeah, well, that's unfortunate for someone.
And so that's democracy.
Oh, that's sad.
So, but that's the reality of what you see around in the world today.
Right.
And yes, if you think about kingdoms as a theocracy, it's actually God's kingdom established by God. And so in a theocracy, it's God's rules and laws that are being obeyed. And so it's not a human being who is dictating things because of their own limited concerns or personal interest. There's no altruism in mm-hmm. any of the leaders mm-hmm. today. But with the Golden Age, totally altruistic. They don't want anything from you. So
okay.
it's part of that process of giving. And so in leadership today, where everything is being done with an ulterior motive.
Okay.
And you can see that. And of course, when the kings and queens lost their purity, then they came down from that stage of actually being altruistic, then through the ages we've seen how that's been in a state of
right.
decline.
The right.
Baba's talking about that stage where there's great wisdom. You know, when Baba says they don't need to have advisors, it's not because they're arrogant and say, I don't want your advice, but rather they've been following Srimad to such an extent that that wisdom of what is right and what, there's nothing wrong in Satyug, but what exactly is it that I need to do, which is accurate, they're touched by that. So within the theocracy, it's a touching or creation by God. And a democracy, somebody called it demon crazy.
So given the state of the government now, we have a lot of incentive to become royalty, right? It's time. When I'm listening to you about there's this phrase, the divine right of kings, right? And so there is living in the idea of a kingdom. There is the idea that originally it was divine. Even today, right? There's still that.
That idea is still around.
Right.
We talk about it. And of course, the kings of the Copper Age onwards felt it was their right.
Right.
And so they took it as the right of birth rather than right from God. So, but they called it the divine right.
Compromised idea.
There's a divine hand at work that's given them that status. So
right.
They're talking about karma in a way. That when you're born with that privilege. You're not made into a king, but you're born into that family.
Because of some past
karmas
you've done that have made you worthy of this.
Yeah.
Now you live in a kingdom. Well, you have one. We don't have one. Well, I guess it depends on your opinion as to whether one is a king or not. We don't have a king. You have one. So when you look at the regard that is given, I'm remembering the funeral procession of the queen, right? I mean, the whole world
was watching.
Was riveted
watching
this procession. Yeah. And I don't think it was just the ritual. I don't think it was just the ritual. I think it was maybe a wistfulness of some kind. What do you think?
I think there was a very rich regard for the queen anyway.
Yeah.
Her character, her values and her stability, all of these won her a huge amount of admiration from people. And when there's a person like that, then yes, there's a specific protocol they were following, but it wasn't just simply because of protocol. They
right.
were really offering that regard from their hearts.
Right.
And so, yes, it was an act of love that happened, which is why people were riveted. If it had just been to do, people would have switched off. But you could just see the love and respect with which they were doing everything.
Yeah. So, as you said, even in Kali Yuga, there's dignity, there's graciousness, there is character, there is stability, even now. Even at the very, very end.
I mean,
it's
now gone past.
Right.
I don't see another one with the same qualities.
Right.
But
we
certainly
saw.
She was the embodiment.
Right.
Yeah.
Who was telling me a story that someone was in front of the queen and lost their ability to speak because of anxiety? I don't know. In the last 2 days, someone told me this story. And that she called over her corgis. And they played with the dogs until the person calmed down. Isn't that sweet? I mean, in terms of character, that sensitivity.
Yeah.
All right, so that's Kali Yuga. How about Confluence Age royalty? Is there such a thing as royalty in the Confluence Age?
Worthy. Worthy of what?
Royalty in the Confluence Age.
Okay.
When have you seen evidence of royalty in the Confluence Age?
Thank you. As I said, in this gathering of kings, the families, the royal families, you could see that graciousness and kindness and love. They also mentioned something very nice because they had to hand over a lot of their property, and I don't know what the division factor was, how much you keep, how much you give to the government, I have no idea. But a lot of them still have a huge amount of wealth. And somebody within the gathering said, she knew the people there, and she said, I know all of you, and I know that your lives are not just for yourself, but your lives are for service of others.
Mm-hmm.
And so apparently it seems that they're still involved in very, very good causes. And actually that's also true of the royal family in Britain. They're always involved in deserving causes.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, it's a very different situation, but they want to do something for people. And it goes back right to Sangam Yuga.
where
Baba and Mama would always be giving, 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 and the Hindi word dene wala is devta, the one who gives, and the one who takes is not a devta, is not a deity, they're a taker. And so it's as if, you know, that samskar of wanting to give to society, to their country, that's still very alive and present within them.
So that generous nature. Now,
and that thought of giving.
Right. Mm. So I thought you were going to answer that question with the dadis.
Baba and Mama.
Right.
And then, of course, the dadis are next in line.
That's when we've seen royalty, right?
Yeah.
So say something about that. You knew those dadis for a long time. You traveled with them when you were young. You've seen them in all kinds of situations, some not the best and some the best. What do you notice about them in terms of royalty?
If I think about four dadis, and one of them was actually a Didi, Didi Manmohini. She was a Dadi, but they called her Didi Manmohini. And then the three other Dadis that you know so well, Dadi Prakashmani, Dadi Janki, Dadi Gulzar. So if I look at these four,
uh-huh.
and their examples in front of some of you, who didn't meet any of the Dadis, these four Dadis?
So a few of you need a little refresher, right? You want a little description.
Yes, it's a good number.
Yeah.
So, you know that they didn't ever keep anything for themselves. It was always the thought of giving.
You know, the first time I came to Madhuban, I was told I should bring a gift. So I shopped for like 2 days. And Dadi nodded at it and handed it off. I was shocked. What was that about? But they don't keep anything. It's not for them.
They don't keep it. They pass it on. And with Dadi Janki, she had all these little angels on the mantelpiece. And you just had to say, Dadi, that's really lovely.
How it goes.
And so Hansa had to be very aware of this.
Right.
And so she made sure that there were things that Dadi could give away and then things that she didn't want Dadi to give away. So generosity was very much in their spirit. Many of you have heard this story, but I don't mind sharing it again. Age 8 and 7, 8, and it's children, and I'm one of those little children, and we're playing in a garden, and we're having some sort of class, something of gyan. And Dadi comes by at 12 o'clock, and she sees that the children are still there. The center was just behind. And so she says, the children must be hungry. And she comes and brings the food from the center, and she feeds us all. It's a little bit, but it's enough. She knows we've got to get back home and whatever. And much later on, I discovered that it was her lunch. And the other sister who lived with her lunch too. And they didn't have enough money to be able to prepare another meal for themselves. And so it was really... So generosity is not when there's abundance. Generosity is a state of being where whether you have for yourself or you don't have for yourself, you just see the need of the other and you give. And none of the children would have gone knocking on the door and said, Daddy, we're hungry. We weren't thinking about it, but she thought about it.
Mm.
And she brought out the food. And so it's, again, something that Daddy Prakashmani, simple days, beggary part, and it would be for others, for others. And so Mama and Baba, the same. Not for me, for others.
So you're saying that desire to be generous to your own detriment even, mm-hmm. comes from feeling full, feeling you have everything. And you're saying this was at a time where there wasn't a lot of money per se. There wasn't a lot of food in the house. So explain that a little bit. Unpack that.
The fullness is the fullness inside. it's not that the cupboard is full, the cupboard is bare, but the fullness inside triggers that feeling of, well, this one needs something, can I give them that? And so it translates not just in terms of spiritual sustenance, but also physical sustenance. And so there were times when in the yajna there was nothing, but still Baba would want the children to have something. And then it would be the berries from the trees. Let's go for a walk and you can have the berries from the trees for breakfast. Right. So always this concern of taking care of others, giving benefit to others physically and spiritually.
Yeah. And if I remember that story, the children didn't want him to feel bad that he didn't have anything to give them, so they claimed they were very full on berries, right? So it's back and forth,
that's
this
right.
Generosity.
Yes.
Okay. So the Dadis are our model for confluence aged generosity, and I think go ahead.
There's another thing that comes in with that feeling of, I have all that I need, and what more do I want? And that is that your eyes are not drawn to anything or anyone. It's something that Dadi used to take up in her classes quite a lot, that if I'm eyeing something that you have, maybe it's your pretty notebook, and you can see somebody's watching, and so when you have that feeling that you have everything you want, you don't really notice what somebody has and they don't have. You don't see that. But also with people, my love is for God. Baba's giving me all his love, and so why should I be attracted to another human being? What is there that a human being can give me that God cannot give me or hasn't already given me?
And so is this an aspect then of how revelation happens? People find themselves in Brahman environments and they're given things and given things and given things. I remember with Call of Time, by the time you get to the last day, people are like, you know, you've given them a shawl, you've given them a book, you've given them tolis and blessings and all of that, and then you give them one more thing. Is this a part of the way that people recognize that there's a different character here? I mean, is it connected with that?
Well, I've thought about this in a different context, and that is that when Baba's telling us to keep a stock of food, in the final period, when there's people around you who don't have food, it's not just the stock is for you, but the stock is to share with whoever comes to your door. And if you can do that, then that's only because you know that Baba's going to give you whatever you need and you don't mind sharing it. So it's not with a reluctance that you open up the door and say, yes, please share, but it's with a generous heart, because you know that they need it, and somehow Baba's going to look after you, whether it's in this body or whether Baba calls you back home.
Wow.
But Baba's going to look after you. So I think that state of faith that Baba's with me, Baba's going to take care of me. And yes, I think in those final moments when we're able to offer things to others that they need, that is definitely going to be part of the revelation. So it's not that they see me being generous now and they'll think, well, this is God. Very often people talk about India being a culture of gifts, and you see it. Some of you have traveled to different centers and their hospitality. I mean, there might be exceptions that don't follow this, but they'd be the exception. But otherwise, the hospitality they offer, but also they'll always give you a little gift. Sometimes it's a big gift, but otherwise always, even if it's a little tea towel or something, but they'll want you to take away a gift. So India itself has that culture, but I think it's a follow on from the culture that Baba started, of being able to give and give and give.
Okay, interesting. So, all right. So we're told that we are going to be kings and queens. Do any of you have trouble envisioning that? I'm just curious. Anyone have trouble with envisioning you're going to be diamonds? And I know it's not the easiest concept to just, especially because we're not the diamond crowd, right? So we don't think of ourselves with that. But Baba says we'll have two crowns. He says that we will be, we will have these servants living with us, right? And we're going to be these royal people. So, and there's pictures that have been drawn. They're all golden colored. We're told everything is covered with golden diamonds, right? That's the picture. So if you fast forward from the Dadis and their generosity and all of that to the Golden Age, what should we expect in terms of royalty there? What does it look like?
The Golden Age.
Mm-hmm. Royalty. Royal Sanskara's Golden Age. Yeah. So we know about the diamonds, we know about the gold. So what else is going on? Golden Age's royalty.
The sanskars of really care and share and love and joy. A state in which there's no conflict inside, and so there's no conflict outside. The reason why today there's conflict outside is because of the ego, the jealousy, the anger. And so every soul has reached its perfect state, and so there's a cleanliness of heart. And so there's nothing I want from you, no jealousy, nothing that I have any ego about, because I really feel that everything is a gift. I don't use the word God, but I'm not possessive about it. I don't say, this is mine. And so everything is open. Mm-hmm. There's no locked doors. There's no keys. everything is open and transparent. You know, when Baba uses this expression that the deities don't need to say very much, because they can understand each other. Now, I don't want you to know what's going on in my mind. No way. I don't want to know what's going on in your mind. But in Satyup, we don't mind, because the mind is clean. And so you pick up my thoughts, and I can pick up your thoughts. And so part of royalty is that you don't get into detail of discussion and expansion and having to prove that you're right. That's not royal at all. So whether it's Sangam Yoga, whether it's Satyug, you can see the similarities. And of course, Baba always says that the sanskars you need to emerge now are the deity sanskars, those royal sanskars. And it's those sanskars, as they become visible now, how did we know that the Dadis are part of the eight? And that means really the empress and empresses. You're talking about that level of royalty, not just a little kingdom here, but the masters of the world, literally. And you could see those sanskars in them. There was no conflict inside. And there was also a vision of equality for all. The deities know that this one's a subject and this one's in the royal family or this one is whoever. But the regard with which they see everyone is equal. And again, we saw this in the Dadis. Didn't matter what somebody's background is or even what their story is, but they would just give regard to the soul. Mm-hmm. And so today we see that. But we know that this is the quality in the future.
That's lovely. You know, I'm remembering, I asked Brother Bridge Mohan, what is the talk about the Mariottas? And he said that his understanding of the Mariottas was that it is an inner state of character that is natural, that it's not really a set of rules. He said, for example, the Mariada of a fire is to be hot. So if a fire isn't hot, it's broken, it's Mariada. Now, when we think about the Dadis, and then we think about where we are currently, and all the rules that we try to follow, don't have waste thoughts, right, all of that, it seems like they are rules now. I mean, they're Srima, they're guidance rules that come in the Murlis. And we make all this effort to keep our mind clean and not have unkind thoughts or whatever. But when we are there, when we have become a Dadi or a royalty, or we're in the presence of royalty, we'll realize that that is their natural nature, right? They're not making any effort. They have become that. Their Mariada is graciousness and no conflict and no wanting and all of that. It will be.
And you mentioned another very beautiful quality, and that is to always see good in another. Being able to see the good, and of course today, where there's a difficulty with somebody's samskaras, then the way you change your perception of them is asking yourself, well, what is the goodness in the soul? What is the speciality in the soul? So that you don't have unkind thoughts. And so that state, anyway, everyone in Satyuga is good. But they've come to that point because the effort they made now is to be able to only see good, not to see anything else.
Yeah.
With Adi Janki, I used to be able to talk to her about somebody's samskaras, and then she'd give me a pointer, and because she also could see that. But she'd ask me, well, how do you deal with it? And then she'd give me some way of dealing with it. Like at one point, there was somebody I was having difficulty with, and she said, okay, there's a need in another place, and I can send this person there, but would you be able to do what you're doing plus what they're doing?
And she's so clever, no?
And so on one level she was teaching me that Baba needs everyone, and you have to see their specialities.
Mm-hmm.
But she was also, in a way, acknowledging that there is a difficulty. For the last few years, she would not even acknowledge that there's a problem.
Really?
She just wouldn't.
There goes your pointers.
And so I... well, I think she probably also thought she's given me enough. but I could see that there was no point in talking to her about this thing or that thing or the other thing. But then she didn't like that either. And so she teased me in class and tell everybody in class, Janti doesn't talk to me about anything anymore.
She was very good at the public.
So my point that when you just keep seeing good and you don't even notice any other thing, then that again brings you to that stage where really, you can see constant goodness in everyone, and that takes you there.
Mm, beautiful.
The thing about the difference between Golden Age and Silver Age is very interesting, because the symbol of the Silver Age is the bow and arrow, and so the symbol of the warrior, the fight still going on, and of course the Golden Age, it's souls. The victory, the memorial of the rosary of victory.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've achieved that state of victory in which no conflict, nothing bad, nothing negative. And as you said, the natural state of Mariada is there. It's not a guideline or a rule that they're following, but it's natural. And the same thing with the Golden Age, that they are natural. They only see good. There's nothing else that they see at all.
Okay, I want to ask you about the royalty of purity. Right, so we get these Murlis that talk to us about the personality of purity being connected with royalty. Can you make explicit the link between royalty and purity, especially as a progression. So we're all making this effort to become pure, to become Bapsaman, to become Karmatit, Sattu Pradhan, right? We're always trying to get ourselves to this place of complete purity. But in terms of the progression towards royalty, what do we do? You know, see if it can be as grounded as possible.
The first thing would be to follow the external things of purity. The purity in celibacy, but also the vision of brotherhood, so that it's not just with, you know, that personal relationship, but with everyone. Can I just see each one as the brother, the soul consciousness?
Right.
Then there's purity of diet. And I want to mention something that's very basic, but I think it's useful at this moment. Not just sattvic food, but the preparation of sattvic food, which means no eating out. And I know that many people feel now that it's such a bother to cook. And so, can you just get frozen food? Can you just get, you know, ready-made food somewhere? But also, you know, when you buy things like biscuits and chocolates and things, you really don't know what's in it. I was shocked when just recently I understood that one particular company, orange juice, has beef extract in it. Now, you really have to look at the labeling so clearly. But totally, you know, in days gone by, the daddies wouldn't even have a drink outside. And so you can see that there's a reason behind that.
Right.
So purity of food, now to whatever extent I want to follow that through in my own life. But it's an important one. Who prepares the food? And if I'm eating pre-packed things, how pure are they? Am I willing to go without them so that then I preserve what I know is total purity?
Right, I want to ask you a delicate question. Baba talks about the beauty of milk and ghee in the Golden Age, right?
The purity of?
Beauty of ghee and milk in the Golden Age. You made a decision some months, years ago, to not eat dairy. Is that connected with this, or it was just personal preference?
I think there's a difference between the expression that comes, rivers of milk and honey, and the rivers of ghee and butter and stuff. So I think that's just an expression for the abundance. That's one thing. But the second thing is that there was a professor in Germany who, I don't think Hans or Hilde are here, they'll be coming later, I think. But it was in their home, and Hans had cooked this sumptuous meal, vegan meal, and the question came up about dairy. And the professor said, if you see why, and he was a professor who had studied the Vedas also, German, and he said, if I think back even to 100 years ago, what was happening in many parts of the world, the cow was almost part of the family, and especially in India. And animals were being treated with compassion and love, and everything was more natural. And so if it was that time, and Brahma Baba had milk, no problem. But today, things are very different.
So it's really about contemporary conditions, and that is what you're saying?
And also compassion.
Compassion.
Because the way that the milk is produced, I don't want to go into details. There's lots of things on YouTube that you can find that tell you what's happening in dairy farming, and it's absolutely awful. Any farming, animal farming, you know, the production of animals for food is absolutely disgusting.
So it's about looking at the seed of things. Who is cooking the food? What's the consciousness of them? What's the condition of the cow that's giving the milk? It's about that. That's what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying. And cows are sattva pradhan. The grass is sattva pradhan. I'm so
everything
is fine.
The cows are beautiful. Golden aged cows.
Yeah. So purity for diet. Purity also of the things I'm consuming mentally. What am I looking at? What am I seeing? Your images and voices thing. That, you know, the images you see leave a deep imprint. I know one person who we nearly lost in terms of being a Brahmin, because they had, you open the computer, and from one thing, from work, and a little bit more work, a little bit more service, you go into other things because there's so many distractions that come up. And when we spoke to the person, finding out, oh, what's going on? What's gone wrong? And it was because they'd started to see movies that were not very sattvic.
Mm-hmm.
And one person, a 15-year-old actually, this was in Leicester, and this young guy was coming to class, and he was really being given a lot of love from Daddy. And then he stopped coming to class. What's happened? He's watching television, and the television becomes later and later. Now, of course, you have home movies, and you can stay up all night watching movies.
Mm.
And this was some years ago, so it wasn't all-night movies, but even just getting up late, going to bed late, getting up late, no class.
So what you put in your mind is part of it. I'm curious, how many of you have stopped watching the news or cut down your news intake? I'm just curious. Naturally you did this, yeah. I'm not surprised. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's what you're saying.
Yes,
right?
The purity on that level.
Okay.
Purity in terms of company. Whose company am I keeping? And there's Murali, it comes round in the cycle every 5 years, but there's a Murali in which Baba's talking about be a Sakar Murali, be selective about whose company you keep. Baba's been very explicit about it. You can say they're a Brahmin, but what is their influence on you? What is the quality of impact that they have on you? I spent half an hour with a Brahmin, and am I at the end of that closer to Baba, or am I further away from Baba? And by being further away from Baba, the sign is now I'm more thinking about human beings and what's going on out there, mm-hmm. rather than Baba and Gyan and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So spending time with anyone, Laukik people is one thing, but Brahmin family also, I have to keep this eye open. And so that I'm very aware, because I'm still at the stage where I'll be influenced.
Okay, so I have a question. So you said a few minutes ago, we have to look and see only the beautiful thing in them. And so we're making that effort to see the beautiful thing, but we're not so strong yet. So we see the not beautiful thing. Now I have a choice. Do I just try harder to see only the beautiful thing? Or do I say, I'm sorry, I can't keep your company because you're messing up my stage?
That's not being very yogi.
All right, guide us here. We are effort makers, so guide us.
But sometimes it's not even that you're seeing a particular weakness in them or anything, but it's just that their company is such that it's not bringing you any closer to Baba. And you're not strong enough to influence them, to bring them closer to Baba. If you are able to do that, wonderful. But you're just listening to them, and it's taking you further and further away from your goal. And so purity in terms of the company I keep.
So what do I tell them? What do I do? I don't tell them anything, right? I don't tell them. But what do I do? Do I
distance
myself?
I excuse myself politely.
Sorry, I'd love to spend time with you, but I have to clip my nails.
Not quite. But yes, you can find a very good reason I need to be somewhere else.
But then when I'm stronger then, so once I'm stronger and I can look at them and like Dadi, I can now see their beauty, now I can come back into proximity, right?
Drama will make it happen. It's okay. Not that you make a conscious decision usually. The drama will bring them again into your sphere, but now you're at a different stage and so you're able to help them.
Okay.
So these are the first basic things about purity.
Right.
Then the more subtle things. Anger is easy to check in itself. And now I'm talking about not just celibacy on that level, but any of the vices. And the most subtle of all is ego. Especially when I'm a yogi and a jnani, because I think I'm right.
Mm-hmm.
And so this idea, I'm yogi, I'm jnani, I'm right, and there you see this monster is actually present already.
Right.
And so then my behavior with others isn't of equality or humility.
Right.
But now it's with a tone of, I know better than you know, and you should be listening to me.
Right.
Your idea is definitely not as good as my idea.
Right.
And so these are the subtle things with ego that come up.
Right.
And of course, the attachment to the body. Ego and attachment both are very close. One definitely leads to the other. So the ego of the body, no, I need to have my beauty sleep, I need to do this, I need to do that.
Sure.
Instead of thinking, well, what is the need of the moment? If the need of the moment is that somebody needs help, somebody needs time, well, you saw Daddy again. And all these, I remember one situation in Madhuban. There was a conference going on and we brought guests from abroad, we, Gayatri and myself, and the conference had taken up all sorts of subjects including the sermonizer of the Gita. Now these people weren't bothered whether it was Krishna or Shiva, but their bother was that we've been told about Hinduism and we didn't come here to learn Hinduism.
Mm.
And it was quite an extreme situation that had happened. So we went to see Daddy and we said, we need to see you. And she said, this is Pandit Pavandes. And she said, well, I'm supposed to be at this cultural program. I have to stay till the end because I have to give gifts to the artists. And so we looked at each other and said, it's okay, Daddy, we'll wait if you can then meet us at that time. And our imagination was that, you know, how long would all that take? Max an hour, but it went on longer. And in those days, they didn't have just little items. They used to create plays, musical plays. Some of you would remember the days of conferences and a program going on for an hour and a half, something like that. Anyway, so she came. We sat in Baba's room and by then somebody told us, so we went to see her in her room. And by 11:30, Dadi is willing to listen to what we have to say because she knows that we're not going to waste her time. It must be something really serious, and it was. And so at the end of that, you say, what should we do? Shall we tell the delegates who have come, don't come to the conference? We'll take you out to Guru Shikhar or wherever, take them out on an outing, but then they miss the event. And Dadi said, no, you don't say anything to them. Just make sure that they're there for the morning session. And in the morning session, did she speak to Baba? Did she get a touching from Baba? Whatever it was, she gave such a beautiful talk on the universality of peace, of love, of, you know, the qualities that are universal qualities, and that this is why we're here, to think about this and develop these further in our own lives. And all their fears went away, and they were happy babies.
She was magic in those ways.
She does. She
yeah.
did. But she was willing to listen to us at 11:30 at night.
Wow.
Now, if it's me and I'm thinking, tomorrow I have to read the Murali, tomorrow I have to be at the conference, I'm not going to get any rest. And so maybe I'd say, talk to me tomorrow.
Maybe, but I've seen you do these things too. I've seen you do this recently. I've seen you do these things. Let me just pause. Does anyone have a question about anything that's been said? Because we can bring a mic out and you can ask Sister Jenty this question. Anything? Yeah, let's take a couple questions and then we'll... Right here, in the third row. Let's take the traffic control first. Can you stand?
Before this question, can I just connect something? Royalty means that there's that state in which there's no influence from anything out there. It's only Baba's influence on the soul. And so the final stage of purity is that I'm not struggling to have pure thoughts or pure samskaras. I've done all that work. And then in that final stage, only God's protection, only God's canopy above me, God's influence on me. And that is the state that's royal.
So only God's influence, no influence of anything out there. Didn't Baba say when we reach that stage we disappear?
More or less.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We'll take a couple of questions. Yes. Can you stand?
Yes,
your
sure.
Name, your country?
Om Shanti.
Om Shanti.
I'm from India, but I came with a group of South Korea. So my question was very similar to right now, which was discussed, that in the end stage, when we are into purity, we don't know what vices are. We are that much detached from the vices and everything. But at the same time, we have to do service, especially Vacha Seva. So we need to know what vices are. I think, you know, like, for example, in purity, it's like we don't know what ego is. That level of purity we have to reach, it's what Baba says. But in Vacha Seva, we have to mention what ego is. So we need to know what ego. So it's like, how can we keep balance between, we know vices, but we are detached from the experiences of it, or...
Okay, do you understand that question?
Sort of, Dalitel.
So you're saying we are to be beyond the vices, but don't we have to be a little bit aware to make sure that we're beyond the vices? Is that your question?
To be able to explain to others.
Yeah.
Explain to others,
yeah.
Check, make sure, right? Can we be oblivious? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. It's like in the intellect, vices shouldn't be there at all because deities doesn't even know what vices are.
Sure.
But when we do seva, we have to, in the intellect, we know.
Some level of awareness.
Yeah, so, till what level we need to keep aware, just for the sake of service, because we have to do service. But do we need to keep vices in there, or it's not required, or...
Can we just get rid of them completely so we can't
yeah,
even
we don't
talk
even
about
know
them?
What it is,
like
yeah.
When Dadi could no longer see anyone straight.
It will take time, but even, like, you know, to process it that we have to erase.
Okay, I think we got it. All right, thank you.
Thank you, Papa.
Yeah. Do you want to take a couple questions and
yeah.
then answer?
No.
You want to answer this?
I'd like to just explore this.
Good.
Yeah. The stage of the deities where they have no awareness of the vices is a different one. Today, I remember my own story. I don't keep thinking about it all the time, but I'm aware of it. What happened to me in childhood and so on and so on and so on. But I'm not stuck to it. So in the same way, I'm not caught up in the vices anymore, but I remember how I dealt with it. What are the steps that I took to deal with anger? What are the steps I took to deal with attachment, etc.? So I'm not affected by them anymore, but I haven't forgotten my own story. So I can share my experience of how I dealt with X, Y, Z.
Is that helpful? Yes. Moving in the right direction, right? Can we could take one more. All right, one here. And we've got two more, and then we'll stop. Okay, we've got three more. All right, you have to be essenceful.
Yes.
Your name and your country?
Yes, my name is Ellen from Portugal.
Ellen from Portugal.
And, you know, this is very interesting because I feel that in terms of really accepting everyone and embracing everyone, because, you know, not to reject anyone, and also to face, you know, ulterior motives or second intention or third intention, I feel the line is very thin. And my question is, to really draw this line with self-respect, very stable self-respect. And my question to Sister Jenti is really some hints on really stabilize the self-respect. Because then when you have self-respect, then you can embrace everyone and accept, but also feel protected and not influenced.
Okay, yeah? So you want her to give you a hint. So let's say someone is talking to you and they have an ulterior motive and you see that ulterior motive, but you want to only see their beauty. How is she going to do that?
But also how to actually maintain that stability.
And stability and self-respect.
I'm thinking that when I'm really stable in my self-respect, it's happened because I've been building it up. And one of the factors of self-respect is that I follow my own inner core values. And Lokix would say, well, everyone's inner core values are different. And I would say that the original qualities of the soul, the peace, the love, the truth, the purity, the joy, these are the original core values of every human being. And so the more I'm in touch with those and the more I'm practicing following those in my life, on an inner level, I'm able to keep my own dignity because now I'm valuing myself and loving myself because these qualities or things that I'm doing, I'm not just thinking about it or feeling it, I'm actually following them in my life. Then nobody can shake my dignity. But also there's something else I've seen. That stage where there is somebody who has an ulterior motive or bad intentions or whatever, there's a touching that the dadis used to get. And that touching would be a touching from Baba. And they would continue to be polite and help and, you know, give gyan or comfort or whatever it is that was needed. But they would know instinctively through Baba's touching to be safe. Don't get too involved with this individual. Protect yourself from this individual. I saw that with Dadi Janki many times. And I didn't see it with Dadi Kumarka, but she talked about it a few times when she knew she had to keep a good relationship, but she also knew that Baba was going to protect her, and she had to follow that instinct of keeping herself safe.
Is that helpful?
Yeah.
Okay.
Om Shanti, Sister Anne from Guatemala. When we started in our 30s, 40s, and others from the same age had some children, but they were really enthusiastic and surrendered to their Brahmin life. But then the children got married, they had grandchildren, and now they dedicate more time to the grandchildren. So the attachment there is really strong. So they, you know, they're losing the Mariadas and
Baba. So the question is
the attachment that the grandmothers have for the children, and they, you know, put on a side part of their lifestyle.
Yes, I've seen it happen. So what do we do about it?
Is that the question?
You can have a chat with them and you just have to see if they're ready to listen. And if they're not, you just know that they've got enough gyan and now it's up to them to do whatever. You can't change them. You can only give an idea that maybe they could spend more time at the center rather than sitting at home babysitting their grandchildren and things like this. Yeah, I see it happen a lot. But you can just try and help them, and then it's their fortune, their destiny. They have to make the right choices.
So
there was somebody here, just behind
there. Was there another hand?
Yeah.
Okay.
She had a hand up long
right,
time.
Right. Okay. Your name? Your country?
I'm Shanti. Sister Neera from USA. My question is, in this Brahman life, we conquer over Maya and vices and Ravan by staying constantly in company of Baba and attain the deity, royalty qualities. And Sister Jayanti just said that deities are completely free of vices or unaware of vices. So what happens in Golden Age? There is no Maya, no vices. Then how come the soul loses that purity? What is that?
Okay.
It's a gradual loss of power. Very simple example. Here's a battery that's being used and you're not doing anything wrong with it. It's playing its role, it's performing its job, but the power gradually is lost. And then there comes a certain point where it's no longer useful anymore. And so the same thing is happening with the soul. This is why the concern is to take power from the Almighty, so that I'm not just taking peace, but the power of peace, the power of love, the power of purity. And the extent to which I take that power determines when I come into the cycle. And the souls, like Baba's been talking about, the 84 birth souls, well, they've taken that much power that lasts them through the whole cycle. Less power, fewer births, and then even the souls who do begin with full power, by the time we get halfway, the consciousness flips. I'm no longer in that state of awareness. I've forgotten about soul. Now I'm just here. And the Pandora's box opens.
Is that helpful? Did that help? Yeah? Okay, so we talked about Iron Aged purity, where they still have their dignity and graciousness, etc., and the rights of kings. We've talked about Confluence Aged purity, and the generosity and selflessness of the Dadis. Golden Aged purity,
royalty.
And the Golden Aged royalty then was long. It was about the Mariadas, etc. And then we talked about Silver Aged royalty, actually. And then you went into purity itself, right? External and internal. So what is your guidance for us? If we are in this school for princes and princesses, if you were just going to give us two pieces of guidance, what would that be?
The practice of soul consciousness is the only way to survive in the coming months and years, because things are going to get more dramatic, more crazy, and to maintain my dignity, my royalty, my purity, this practice is absolutely vital. I know Baba talks about it every single day, but that's because we still forget. And Baba talks about it more than once in Muralis, every Murali. And that's because it's so slippery. It just slips away because right. It's been 63 births in which we forgot about soul. And so Baba's reminder, but my practice, I must have that practice of just soul consciousness and seeing everyone as that shining star. And the second thing, really, just stay connected. Before I eat, while I'm eating, before I begin a job, when I finish a job, maybe during the task, I have to keep my intellect occupied and concentrated and focused. But before and after, can I make it a habit again and again to connect with Baba, to connect with Baba? it's these two things that there was a Murali recently in which Baba spoke about remembrance, remembrance, remembrance 59 times in one Murali. Do you remember that Murali? Nearly every other sentence was remember me, remember me, remember me. And that's because this is absolutely the essential need. And it is a fact that my dignity, my security, my stability depends on soul consciousness, but also my connection with Baba. And so the fears we have, the anxieties we have, the race thoughts we have, all of that finishes if I just focus on these two things.
I think we know that guidance.
But we just
there's no shortcut, right?
Just need to be underlined.
Mm-hmm.
Just underlined.
All right. Sister Jenti, thank you. Thank you for being so big-hearted and generous and smart and wise and good with us.
Thank you for the beautiful way in which you put the questions.
Thank you, Ella.
Thank you. It was very, very inspiring. And I have to check my purity levels because purity is really the key to royalty. So thank you. And thank you also, very, very good question. So we got out these jewels from her mind. So thank you.